Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. We're going to get started with a little bit of business and roll call, and then we'll get right into the Thursday, May 26th meeting. Welcome to Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission meeting. This is May 26, 2022. We'll take a roll call. Applin, present.
Abel, present.
Bell,
present. Foster, present.
Hildebrand, present.
Rowling, present.
Thank you. We have a quorum. This meeting is called to order May 26, 2022 at 9:08 a.m. Before proceeding with any business, I believe Mr. Carter Smith has a statement to make.
I do. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the Office of the Secretary of State. Is required by Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I'd like for this fact to be noted in the official record of the meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Carter. As I guess before we get started, I'd like to recognize that our faithful Dee, his mom has passed away. And so I believe that happened yesterday.
Yes, sir. Yeah, she passed away, and it was quick, and thankfully all of her family, including Dee, were around her to be able to say goodbye and wish her off. And if everybody would keep her in your thoughts and prayers, I know that'd be much appreciated.
Everyone in this room has a Dee story or a Dee memory, and she's just incredible. So we'll have our prayers with her and with her family. And so,
thank you, Chairman.
Yes, sir. Before we proceed, I'd like to announce that the commission meeting action item number 3, comprehensive chronic waste disease CWD management rules, triple T provision, recommended adoption of the proposed change has been withdrawn from today's agenda. We will not be discussing that. So if anyone didn't get the message and has traveled, we'll not be addressing that issue today. So I want to let you know. I need approval of minutes before we get started, held March 24, 2022, which have been distributed. I'll need a motion and a second from a commissioner.
Commissioner Bell makes motion.
Abel, second.
Bell, Abel, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Acknowledgement of the list of donations which has been distributed. I'd like a motion from a commissioner.
Rolling second.
Have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Next, consideration of contracts, which has also been distributed. Same thing. I need a motion and a second.
Bell, second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. Special recognition award, Mr. Smith. Would you like to make these presentations?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, for the record, my name is Carter Smith with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. I've got just two presentations this morning. The first one, I have to tell you, is personally very meaningful to me. This is a award that's the Wildlife Division, and it created in honor of Randy Fugate. And it's the Randy Fugate Memorial Wildlife Professional of the Year Award. And it's special to me not only because of who it's named after. Randy was a great mentor, but actually because of who's getting it today, Mark Mitchell, who was a great inspiration to me early on in my career, and actually well in advance of that. Some of y'all may remember Randy. Randy had been with us, John, for 43 years as a wildlife biologist in South Texas, just a larger-than-life personality, loved by all the landowners down in South Texas, and just was a phenomenal ambassador and representative of this department. And so this award was really designed to embody the values that Randy epitomized every day in terms of service and professionalism and just being a great ambassador for the department. And I could not be more pleased that this year's Randy Fugate Memorial Professional Award is going to Mark Mitchell. And I first met Mark when I was at Spring Chicken growing up. He wasn't all that much older, but he had started with the department there in Jackson County, and then he came to Gonzales County as a wildlife biologist, and he was a friend of one of my older cousins, and they used to cowboy together. And I remember the first time I met Mark, he came out to the ranch at Smiley at the request of my dad and uncle, and we were parked around the pens. Mark, I don't know if you remember this story, but they were talking, and there was something that Mark needed out of the back of his truck, and I went and hopped in the truck and was kind of poking around looking for it. Unbeknownst to me, Mark had been collecting rattlesnakes I think it was a professor at Texas State, if I recall, and he had this burlap sack that I inadvertently kicked, and when I did that, the buzzing started going off, and whoever wrote that great Woody Harrelson movie, White Man Can't Jump, never saw this boy jump out of a Parks and Wildlife truck in southern Gonzales County, Mark, I'll tell you that. I don't know what he needed, but he didn't get it. Mark, everybody loved him over in that neck of the woods. But in the 90s, Mark had an opportunity to move to Mason County, to a new wildlife management area that C.G. Johnson had donated. Mr. Johnson had donated the Elephant Mountain Wildlife Management Area to Parks and Wildlife, and then later on he donated his exotic game ranch in Mason to the department. And Mark was hired as the lead wildlife biologist out there, and now he's the manager, has been for a long time, and he's just done an extraordinary job. Mark has led the way. Y'all know certainly in the Hill Country we've got a lot of ranches in which people are interested in managing exotics and their native game, and so Mark has been working hard over the years to help understand the interface between exotics and native wildlife on rangelands in the Hill Country. He's transformed the facilities and settings. We have groups and researchers and students and visitors that come out, you know, roughly every other day. There's some group that's visiting the Mason Mountain Wildlife Management Area doing research or learning or education, landowner field days. There's some wonderful research that's happened at Mason Mountain under Mark's leadership, and whether it's, you know, disease stuff or deer stuff or reintroduction of horned lizards. He's created a new prairie dog town out there. I mean, there's just always something cool going on under Mark's leadership out there. He's built a great team, and the WMA is also one of the great examples of the public hunting system and the desirability of that. And every year there's 5,000 or 6,000 applicants for one of the positions to come hunt out at Mason Mountain Wildlife Management Area, and that's no small part to Mark's leadership and just that environment and setting that he's created out there where hunters want to come out and be a part of it and see that special part of Texas right there at the Llano Uplift in the Edwards Plateau. He's just a wonderful guy. Mark has been with us for probably longer years than he wants me to say on the public record, but he's just such a great representative for us in that community. One rancher there in Mason described him really well, that Mark has a big heart for people and even a bigger heart for wildlife, and I think that's a great description of Mark Mitchell, and it's my great privilege to be with you today as we honor him in the memory of the late Randy Fugate with our Wildlife Professional of the Year Award. Mark, please come forward.
All true.
Have you met Chairman Affleck?
No, I don't believe I have.
Mark Mitchell. Yeah.
Hello, Mark.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Okay. Well, thank you.
We got a picture here.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. We've got our next presentation is from an old friend, Graham Jones. Y'all remember Graham, of course, our predecessor colonel to Chad. You don't have to have the last name Jones to be the colonel of Parks and Wildlife. Let me make that clear. Y'all remember Graham from a very long and storied career with this department as a game warden, almost 30 years, retired as colonel. Graham has gotten involved with the backcountry hunters and anglers since he retired, and this is a national group of sportsmen and women that have been largely focused around the country about helping to advocate for hunting and fishing opportunities on public lands, working to promote sound, fish, and wildlife management. And recently, and I say recently, in the last 5 or 6 years, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers established a Texas chapter. And Graham is, I think, president of that board or on the board of directors. They've been very active in a variety of things around the state, involved in river cleanups on the Colorado River. They recently did a really cool habitat restoration project up at the Rita Blanca National Grasslands. They help with the crab cleanup on the coast, and have been big proponents not only in Texas but across the nation on our work on the R3 movement, the recruitment, retention, and reactivation program to get more hunters and anglers and boaters into the outdoors. And Graham is here today on behalf of the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers to make a check presentation to the commission and the department, and I want to invite our old friend Graham Jones to come forward. And so, Graham, the floor is yours.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. Great to be here, Carter. Thank you so much. I just want to say how much we appreciate the work that y'all are doing, advocating and promoting public lands and access. That's what it's all about. Without access, really nothing else matters. And, of course, that habitat is the baseline for that access. Basically, you know, we made contact with both Inland Fisheries and the Wildlife Division through Clayton and Carter and John Sertel and Craig Bonds, and we were able to find a nexus for these funds that directly tie into internships for both Inland Fisheries and the Wildlife Divisions that also, I think, is very important, reach you know, a diverse candidates as well. So folks that maybe that don't have a have had a historically had a good inroad into Parks and Wildlife, this is providing one for them. So today, on behalf of BHA and my friends Ryan and John back there, also board members, we want to donate $8,000 to the department that will be utilized for directly for internships that in turn promote public land access and recruitment, and as Carter said, reactivation, retention, all these things that matter. But again, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your work and your effort.
No, it did good.
All right.
No, it's good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner. That concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Carter, and congratulations. And Graham, it's wonderful to see you retire and then stay involved in everything Texas and everything Texas Parks and Wildlife. Thank you, Graham. Action item number one is the advisory committee rules recommended adoption of proposed changes. Is Laura Carr. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Laura Carr. I'm a staff attorney here at the department in the Legal Division, and I'm presenting this morning on proposed amendments to the Advisory Committee rules. So as you know, the Commission Chairman has the authority to appoint various advisory committees for the department. They advise the department on a variety of issues under the department's jurisdiction, though they have no authority over department policy. As I mentioned yesterday, some advisory committees are required to exist by law, and therefore they have no expiration date. But for the other advisory committees, the government code prescribes a 4-year lifespan unless they are extended by rule. TPWD currently has 12 advisory committees that are set to expire on July 1st, 2022. These committees advise the department on matters related to state parks, wildlife species, coastal and inland matters, urban outreach, and public accessibility. The department believes that these committees provide a valuable service, and therefore staff is recommending adoption of proposed amendments that would continue the committees until July 1st, 2026. The amendments would also extend the terms of recently appointed members to these committees until July 1st, 2026 as well. And I am not going through my presentation, so I'm going to fix that. But there are the requirements. And there we go. This is the meat of what the amendments will do. So on your screen, you'll see a list of the committees that would be extended for 4 years within State Parks, Wildlife Division, Coastal Fisheries, Inland Fisheries Executive Office, and Support Resources. So we've received 5 public comments on this matter, 1 in favor, 4 that were in opposition. To generally summarize the comments that were opposed, commenters supported the abolishment of one or more advisory committees. They did not believe that the committees represented the best interest of the public or private landowners, and a commenter wanted to replace current committee members with new members. Overall, staff is requesting that the commission adopt the proposed amendments as listed in Exhibit A to continue these advisory committees for another 4 years until July 1st, 2026. That concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Laura. Commissioners, we have a recommendation from staff. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, action item 1. We don't have anyone, I believe, signed up to speak.
No.
No speakers in person or on phone. So I'll accept a motion in a second from a commissioner.
Commissioner Bell makes a motion to approve the
bill.
Mr. Foster, second.
Foster, second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion carries. Thank you. Action item number 2 is the public hunting program establishment of an open season on public hunting lands and approval of public hunting activities in the state park. Mr. Moat, good morning.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners, Mr. Smith. For the record, my name is Kevin Moat, Private Lands and Public Hunting Program Director in the Wildlife Division. Today I'll be requesting your approval of 2 items related to the public hunting program. First, staff asks for your approval to establish an open season on public hunting lands for the coming season. And second, we ask for your approval of specific public hunting activities on the proposed units of the state park system for the upcoming season. In order to provide hunting activities on public hunting land, the commission must provide for an open season. For this purpose, staff request your approval to establish an open season on public hunting lands that will run from September 1st, 2022 to August 31st, 2023. The commission is also asked to approve specific hunting activities on units of the state park system detailed in Exhibit A included in your briefing materials. Staff recommends the following motions for your approval. First, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes an open season on public hunting lands to run from September 1st, 2022 to August 31st, 2023. And second, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the public hunting activities contained in Exhibit A to take place on units of the state park system. That concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Kevin. Commissioners, we have recommendation on 2 motions. Any questions or comments from any commissioners? Okay. Hearing none, I would entertain a motion and a second on motion number 1. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes open season on public hunting lands to run from September 1st, 2022, through August 31st, 2023. Scott?
Abel, second.
Abel, second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. The motion number two is Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes public hunting activities contained in Exhibit A to take place on units of the state park system. Same thing. I need a motion and a second.
Foster.
Foster. Rowling, second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion carries. As discussed earlier, action item number three has been pulled from the agenda. We'll move on to action item number four, statewide recreational trail grants funding, recommended approval of trail construction, renovation, and acquisition projects. Good morning, Trey. You're up.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Good morning, Carter. The National Recreational Trail Fund grants for 2022. These funds are federal funds. They are from a rebate of off-highway vehicle fuel tax. 2022's Texas apportionment is $3,954,874. Of that, we can utilize up to 7%, about $279,000 for program administration. And we have about $700,000 that is available from past projects, either canceling or coming in under budget. This year, we received 53 project proposals for the February 1st deadline, requesting a little more than $15 million. In March, the State Trail Advisory Committee met and reviewed all of the projects. There's some of the qualities that they looked at are some of the for quality, cost effectiveness, recreational opportunity impact, and geographic distribution of funds, amongst other items. We are requesting $700,000 to be utilized for state park trail improvements, and here's a list of some of the parks that we'll be doing work in this year. And finally, the recommendation is for funding for 17 projects recommended in Exhibit A in the amount of $4,800,900 in state park trail improvements in the amount of $700,000 is approved, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Commissioners, any questions for Trey?
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Does that include, I'm just asking for voting purposes, the park, Lake Casablanca State Park in Laredo, Texas, Webb County? No?
Well, now we have been contacted by them to talk about a trail project in the park, okay. But it's not included on our list for this year.
Okay, perfect.
So it would be in process. It does take a little while to get those off the ground.
Okay, that's fine.
Sure.
I just would have to abstain if it was going to fund that park. So that's why I asked. Thank you for clarifying. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Commissioner, this is Commissioner Bell. And just in terms of how the money is apportioned, I'm just trying to understand what part comes from Parks and Wildlife, what part might come from private funds, how it's matched up, how the numbers sync up.
Certainly. It is a reimbursable grant program, so it's a matching grant program. 80% is federal funds, 20% is provided either by state or local entities. That can also be volunteer labor. It could be donated goods and services. And then also, just to add, this year, of course, we're adding to that $4.8 million, we're adding $1 million in sporting goods sales tax, which was dedicated to the recreational trail program, which is state funds. Through a rider in this past legislative session.
And then also, are these all the facilities where the trails are being done? Are they all state parks or any of these? I know we have another program where we partner with some of the municipalities or counties for park funding. Does any of this apply to them, or is it just? And it's only a question for clarity.
Absolutely, most of these 17, only one of them is actually a state park. Project in particular, and that's Palo Pinto Mountains. The rest of them are all outside the agency. They go to local communities, anything actually from the federal government to state agencies to municipalities, even nonprofits can apply for.
And maybe the last question, just how do we, is there an opportunity to kind of co-brand this for as far as marketing purposes so that while we're doing something to help folks locally, they also know that Parks and Wildlife is helping the local community so that it might be the city of whatever, the county of whatever is saying we have this park program, but also the Parks and Wildlife kind of is acknowledged as being a partner?
Oh, absolutely. We are the pass-through agency, so even though the money comes from the federal government, it does flow through Parks and Wildlife, and so absolutely we're partners in that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure thing.
Trey, is there any requirement that there's signage up to acknowledge the grant from the department? We see that with a lot of our local park grants, and you'll see that when communities, Commissioner, where, you know, let's say we've given a grant to the city of Tyler for a park development or acquisition, the city will typically put up some kind of recognition for the department. Do you see that at all on the trail grants?
We do see it, though it is not a requirement of the program on a national level or a state level.
So it's encouraged, but not required.
Absolutely, but many projects do put those up, and we have examples of signs to give them that acknowledges both Parks and Wildlife and the National Recreational Trail Fund.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Trey, can you help us understand recommendation Exhibit A in the amount of $4.8 million and then $700,000. Can you connect those?
So the $700,000 is the amount of money that we've collected from basically canceled projects over the years. And so we generally, what we have done over the past 12 years is utilize those funds up to $700,000. For state park trail improvements. Since they're federal funds, they get recycled back into the program. Unlike a lot of the state funds, if a project fails, that money would go back to the general revenue, for instance. In the recreational trail fund, with the federal funds at least, it gets recycled into the program and we're able to utilize it again.
What is the $4,809,000?
What is it?
Yes.
It is the $3.8 million or $3.9 million minus the administration of the program, which is $279,000, plus the $1 million in sporting goods sales tax money that was added into the program with a rider, and then some additional money that we had from those projects that failed.
And will we have a balance left?
We will. Yes, sir.
We had 700 from last year.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Trails are a great thing. It's a great way to get people out and get in the middle of our wild. Spaces are wonderful.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions from any other commissioners? Hearing none, and there's no one signed up to speak, I would accept a motion for approval. Galo?
Abel second.
Abel second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you, Trey.
Thank you.
Item number five is a grant of a pipeline easement, Brazoria County, approximately 2 acres at the Justin Hurst Wildlife Management Area. Mr. Ted Hollingsworth, good morning.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This first item is a second reading. You saw this in March. It's a request from Phillips 66 for a pipeline at the Justin Hurst Wildlife Management Area in southeast Texas, due south of, around the coast, but due south of the city of Houston, just a couple miles from Freeport. The Wildlife Management Area now covers almost 15,000 acres, primarily coastal wetlands, but also some uplands, including some bottomland coastal forests. I won't go into a lot of detail. You've seen this slide before, but the Wildlife Management Area was created in 1985 with the acquisition of the first 8,400 acres. Again, it's now almost 15,000 acres. It just profound conservation, coastal conservation values because of the wetlands, the prairies, the mix of coastal habitats. It's a significant overwintering spot for migratory waterfowl, other shorebirds, wading birds, popular destination for hunting, bird hunting, deer hunting, hog hunting as well. Phillips 66 is still evaluating the veracity of this project, but they've requested an easement for a new 12-inch transmission line for natural gas. It would pass through the property that we added a couple of years ago that we call the Huntington Estate, or the Huntington Unit of the WMA, although Phillips 66 already has a very significant easement that runs farther south through the WMA. It is not in such a location that it would serve the purpose for getting this gas from their Clemens facilities to customers in Freeport. And the pipeline, just as we know from a lot of experience, can't pass north of the WMA because of the communities of Jones Creek and Clute and Lake Jackson. To allow a use or taking, the commission needs to find that there's no feasible or prudent alternative to the route and installation methodologies, that all measures are taken, all reasonable measures are taken to minimize the harm to the facility, and that there's been appropriate notice and public hearing given so that the public can comment if they wish on the project. In this map, you can see that proposed route. It is adjacent to an existing pipeline right-of-way that runs through that Huntington Estate unit and would parallel that and be on the immediately south of the existing pipelines. As of this morning, we've received three comments, one in favor and two opposed. And with that, staff recommends that the commission adopt the resolution that you have attached as Exhibit A. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ted. We have a recommendation from the staff. Any commissioners, any questions? Action item number five.
Commissioner Bell, Ted, I just had one comment or one question kind of for the record. I know that Phillips 66 is a great organization, and they've had some opportunity in that area on easements, and we've had some previous agreements with them. And just as far as catching up and being in compliance with all the items that we've requested, are you happy with where they are right now in terms of other easements and maintaining property and that, and are they on the right path to make sure that they're staying there?
Well, I'm going to say the proof is in the pudding, but they are actively, their staff is actively working with our staff now to resolve those issues that have come up in previous agreements. In general, they've been good partners. They certainly respect the fact that this is a wildlife management area. I think the agreements that we're working on consolidating now are going to improve our communications, going to improve their stewardship of their the rights of way that they have through the facility. So currently I'm satisfied that we're working together in good faith as partners on that site.
Thank you, Commissioner Bell. Anybody else? Hearing none, I will accept a motion from a commissioner and a second. Action item number five.
So moved.
Motion, Scott Rowling, second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you, Ted. Action item number six, expansion of utility easement, Brazoria County, approximately 2.1 acres. Justin Hirsch, Wildlife Management Area, Mr. Ted Hollingsworth.
Chairman, Commissioners, for the record, my name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This item is a request from CenterPoint Electric. Again, it's Justin Hirsch Wildlife Management Area, south of Houston, very near Freeport. I want to point out in this picture, you can see that the north of the property and the east of the property are bounded by a ship channel, industrial facilities, and several communities, including Jones Creek and the communities of Clute and Lake Jackson. We just talked about the history of the wildlife management area. CenterPoint Energy, you granted an easement, or you authorized staff to enter into an easement with CenterPoint Electricity in 2019 for a major transmission line, 345 kilovolt transmission line, which they constructed in 2020 and energized last year. They did advise us at the time that part of this line was to serve a new 138 kilovolt feeder line or drop that would go to South Texas Electric, that would then provide power for a substation, which would provide power for a planned tank battery on the north side or immediately north of the wildlife management area. We did not request those easements at that time, only because the final planning for that substation was not complete. Again, we've been aware that this is coming, and so we really consider this a more of a housekeeping item. You can see in this map the two little narrow easement areas that are requested. The southernmost one actually lies on top of the existing South Texas Electric Cooperative power line easement. And then the narrow one north of that connects to existing center point power easements and would allow service to be dropped into that southernmost easement to connect with the South Texas facilities. And then an overhead easement would allow South Texas to transmit line to a power station, which would be built immediately, again, immediately north of the wildlife management area. To a facility which is not yet constructed. Public comments as of this morning, we've received four comments, three in agreement and two and one comment opposed to the proposal. With that, staff does recommend that the commission adopt the resolution that you have attached as Exhibit A. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Ted, action item number six. Questions, commissioners? Hearing none, would entertain a motion and a second for approval.
Foster move.
Foster.
Hildebrand second.
Hildebrand second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Hearing none, action item number six. Motion carries. Thank you, Ted. Action item number seven. Acquisition of land, Aransas County, approximately 52 acres at Goose Island State Park. Mr. Ted Hollingsworth.
Chairman, commissioners, good morning. For the record, my name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This item represents an opportunity that the department has to acquire a 52-acre tract of undeveloped land that is adjacent to and would be added to the Goose Island State Park in Aransas County. That park is immediately north of the community of Rockport. The park is a delightful park. If any of you have not been there, I would encourage you to drop in there the next opportunity you have. But it started with the transfer of the 150-acre island itself, the Goose Island proper, to the State Parks Board back in 1931. The state immediately acquired another 158 acres on the mainland, and the CCC constructed the state park, the area that is now the core of the state park. Today, the park totals 643 acres and attracts as many as 200,000 visitors a year, which is a lot of visitors for a small park. But again, its location right there on the bay, the excellent fishing, the mild climate during the winter all attracts a lot of people to that park. The bird watching is outstanding, especially during the spring and fall songbird migrations. The tract that we're interested in is the largest undeveloped tract remaining that's adjacent to the state park, the best opportunity we have to grow the park. And one of the most salient features of this tract is that it attracts a lot of whooping cranes. They're there pretty much all winter long. The site is already a magnet for visitors that drive up and park on the public roads adjacent to the property to birdwatch. This would give us an opportunity to manage that traffic somewhat and to create a boardwalk and an observation deck, which would really give visitors a superb opportunity, arguably the best opportunity in Texas to get a good close look at those birds when they're here during the winter, and would also help us protect the birds from unmanaged public access. You can see in this map the tract outline in red is immediately south of what we call the Big Tree Unit or the Big Tree Ranch Unit, where the Big Tree resides. This is a close-up. What attracts those birds is those dark smudges, which are emergent wetlands, and those two ponds on the site, and then those seagrass beds immediately east. That combination of access to crabs, wolfberries, crawdads, small fish is just ideal habitat for the cranes. And like I say, they're pretty much there all winter long, and the public knows that and is already visiting the site in large numbers. We've received 14 comments now, 12 in favor and 2 opposed. This is a picture of that property with a family of cranes that spent much of this last winter out there. Staff recommends that the commission adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire approximately 52 acres of land for addition to Goose Island State Park in Aransas County. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ted. We have a recommendation from staff. Commissioners, questions, thoughts? Hearing none, I would accept a motion and a second.
Abel, so moved.
Abel, Galo. All those in favor, action item number 7, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Thank you. Motion passes. That's an exciting piece of property, Ted. Thank you. Action item number 8, exchange of land, Reeves County, approximately 5 acres, Balmoray State Park. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. Was there a clicker up here?
I don't know. Ted, you take the clicker?
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. For the record, my name is Jason Estrella with the Land Conservation Program. This next item is exchange of land in Reeves County, approximately 5 acres of Balmoray State Park, which is located in the Trans-Pecos, far west Texas, approximately 30 miles south of Pecos. The park in Reeves County is just east of the Davis Mountains. It was developed in the 1930s by the CCC. Central features of the park are a 1.75-acre pool fed by an artesian spring and a restored Senega wetlands. Staff has identified a 5-acre inholding within the state park that is currently owned by the Reeves County Water Improvement District. We've begun negotiations with the district for an exchange of a similar 5-acre tract adjacent to a larger tract owned by the district. Staff has concluded that acquisition of the district tract would allow for an improved design for future public use, protection of critical habitat, and added recreational opportunities for the park. You can see in this map in blue is the 5 acres we would acquire. The yellow triangle to the east is what we would be exchanging to the district. In red is the original boundary of the park, and the yellow boundary is the current much expanded boundary. For public comment, as of this morning, we have received 12 total comments, 10 in support and 2 in disagreement. Staff recommends that the Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the resolution attached as Exhibit A. This concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Jason, thank you. Commissioners, any questions for Mr. Estrella? Hearing none, I'll accept a motion in a second.
Foster.
Foster. Rolling. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Action item number 8. Approved. Thank you. Action item number 9, acquisition of land, Gillespie County, approximately 41 acres at Enchanted Rock State Natural Area. Jason, you're back up.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jason Estrella with the Land Conservation Program. This is acquisition of land, 41 acres at Enchanted Rock in Gillespie County, which is pretty much right in the heart of Central Texas, about 15 miles north of Fredericksburg. The state natural area was purchased from the Nature Conservancy and opened in 1978. Currently, 1,640-acre property is on the National Natural Landmark and is on the National Register of Historic Places as an archaeological district. The SNA is one of the more popular parks within the system with an annual attendance of nearly 300,000. Department staff seeks to acquire approximately 41 acres adjacent to Enchanted Rock from a willing seller. Acquisition of this tract and an access easement, which runs through the heart of the public use portion of the park, would add excellent habitat and recreational value and would eliminate the potential for incompatible development. You can see in this map, site map, yellow boundary at the bottom is the acquisition in question. Red is the boundary of the park. In this map, you see a close-up of the yellow boundary, and the green represents the easement, which runs through the park and is attached to the property. For public comment, we have received 15 total, 13 in support, and 2 disagree. Staff recommends that the Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire approximately 41 acres of land for addition to Enchanted Rock State Natural Area in Gillespie County. And this concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Jason. Commissioner's question, action item number 9. Hearing none, would accept a motion in a second.
Commissioner Bell makes motion.
Bell. Galo second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you, Jason. Action item number 10, acquisition of land, Kimball County, approximately 15 acres at the South Llano River State Park. Jason.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jason Estrella with the Land Conservation Program. This is the acquisition of 15 acres at South Llano River State Park in Kimball County, which is just south of Junction. The park consists of approximately 2,600 acres outside of Junction and sits along the banks of the South Llano River. It was opened in 1990 as a result of a generous donation by Mr. Walter Buck. Today, the park offers swimming in the South Llano River, nature viewing, hiking, mountain biking, and primitive tent camping for the public. Staff has identified an approximately 15-acre tract adjacent to the state park that is currently listed for sale. Acquisition of this tract will improve public access to the river, allow future expansion of recreational opportunities, and minimize ongoing trespass issues. In the site map, you can see to the north the yellow outline of the tract in question. Red is the boundary of the park. Here is a close-up site map of the area with the river running between the yellow and the red. For public comment, we have received 15 total, 13 in support, 2 opposed. Staff recommends that the Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire approximately 15 acres of land for addition to the South Llano River State Park in Kimball County. This concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Jason. Commissioners, question on action item number 10. Staff recommends action, approval of action item number 10, acquisition of land. Kimball County, need a motion and a second. Hildebrand makes a motion. Scott seconds. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you. Action item number 11, acquisition of land, Aransas County, approximately one half of an acre at Rockport State Park Region 2 headquarters. Jason.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jason Estrella with the Land Conservation Program. This is an acquisition of approximately 0.5 acres at the State Park Region 2 headquarters in Rockport. Located along the coast, right in the city of Rockport. State Parks Division 2 owns and operates regional headquarters building there in Rockport. An approximately half-acre tract has been publicly listed for sale with a local realtor. Staff has an interest in this acquisition to improve access to the headquarters, allow future expansion of the site, and allow for additional storage space for equipment and property. In the site map, you can see the park headquarters in red and the subject tract in yellow. For public comment, we have received 10 responses, 8 in support, 2 opposed. Staff recommends that the Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire approximately 0.5 acres of land for addition to the Rockport State Park Region 2 headquarters in Aransas County.
Commissioners, we have a recommendation, action item number 11, acquisition of land, Aransas County. I need a motion and a second, and let's have some discussion. Galo?
Abel, second.
Abel? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Action item number 12, acquisition of land, Harrison County, approximately one-half acre, Caddo Lake State Park. Jason, good morning.
For the record, my name is Jason Estrella with the Land Conservation Program. This is the acquisition of 0.5 acres at Caddo Lake State Park in Harrison County, Northeast Texas. The approximately 460-acre state park was built by the CCC and opened to the public in 1934. Today, the park is a popular destination for bird watching, paddling through the cypress trees, and fishing. More than 70 species of fish occur in Caddo Lake. Staff has identified an approximately half-acre tract at the entrance to the park that is currently for sale. Acquisition of this tract will allow TPWD to protect the aesthetics of the park entrance. Currently, the subject tract contains a vacant convenience store. Staff would like to acquire the tract and remove all infrastructure from the property to restore it back to its natural state. Here we see a site map. Yellow is the state park, and down at the bottom, the blue arrow is the subject tract location. Here's a close-up. For public comment, we have received 14 total, 12 in support, 2 opposed. Staff recommends that the Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorize the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire approximately 0.5 acres of land for addition to Caddo Lake State Park in Harrison County.
Commissioners, we have a recommendation on item number 12, acquisition of land, Harrison County. Any discussion? Hearing none, could I have a motion and a second? Rolling.
Bell seconds.
Rolling, Bell second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you. Action item number 13, acquisition of land, Bear County, approximately 126 acres at Government Canyon State Natural Area. Jason.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jason Estrella with the Land Conservation Program. Government Canyon is located in Bear County, just northwest of San Antonio. It consists of approximately 12,000 acres situated along the edge of the Balcones Escarpment on the northwest side of San Antonio. The SNA protects thousands of acres of the aquifer's recharge zone, as well as portions of the contributing and artesian zones. In addition, these crevices and springs are home to several endangered invertebrates found nowhere else in the world. With approximately 75,000 visitors annually, it is one of the more popular state natural areas and is known for its hiking, biking, and scenic vistas. Staff seeks to acquire approximately 126 acres adjacent to Government Canyon from a willing seller. Acquisition of the subject tract will not only provide additional rec opportunities, but also allow greater protection over the aquifer recharge zone. Furthermore, this would extend the buffer of conserved land between the SNA and the rapidly expanding development of the surrounding area. In the site map, you can see the SNA in red, and along the west side, the subject tract in yellow. For public comment, we have received 15 total, 13 in support, 2 opposed. Staff recommends that the Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire approximately 126 acres of land for addition to Government Canyon State Natural Area in Bear County.
Thank you, Jason. Commissioners, we have a recommendation, action item number 13. Any discussion? If not, motion and a second. Galo.
Second. Foster.
Foster. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Action item number 14, acquisition of land, Matagorda County, approximately 1,100 acres at the Matagorda Peninsula Coastal Management Area. Mr. Ted Hollingsworth.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. Always great being able to say good morning, isn't it?
Yes.
As opposed to good afternoon.
Yes, much better.
This item is just a continuation of our efforts to conserve what we think of as the East Matagorda Bay focal area. And a significant component of that in the focal area is surrounds East Matagorda Bay, which is right in the heart of the coastal bend of Texas. Just due south of Houston, 80 or 90 miles south of Houston right there on the coast. But the coastal management area was created in 2017 with the acquisition of 5,400 acres from the General Land Office. We've been adding to that core ever since. The area is currently a little over 6,600 acres. We currently have an opportunity to add to that. We have funds available. We have some funds left over from our last acquisition that were provided by the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. They've asked us to hold on to those funds and continue our efforts to expand the coastal management area. And we've received a grant from the North American Wetlands Conservation Act, what we call NACA, also to expand the area. We have a contract pending on a tract a little less than 500 acres. We have reason to believe another tract of approximately the same size is available, and we've been offered an undivided interest in the last remaining significant inholding in the coastal management area. You can see from this map the areas outlined in blue are already parts of the coastal management area, and that approximately 1,100 acres that we're hoping to acquire with your authorization would connect those areas and is surrounded by that yellow cloud on this map. We have received no public comments on this particular item. And staff does recommend that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorize the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire approximately 1,100 acres of land for addition to the Matagorda Peninsula Coastal Management Area in Matagorda County. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ted. Commissioners, questions for Ted on action item number 14? Hearing none, we have a recommendation for acquisition of land, Matagorda County. How about a motion and a second?
So moved.
Abel.
Abel.
Second. Foster.
Foster, second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Moving right along, action item number 15, Texas Parks and Wildlife Department marketing efforts. Mr. D, it's Via, hello, how are you? Sorry, it says Mr. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Michelle Diaz, and I'm the Division Director for Communications. So today I'll share with you a quick overview of how marketing efforts, but specifically email marketing efforts, support hunting and fishing license sale revenue. And so the details provided here are actually in response to a question Commissioner Bell asked a few meetings ago about the COVID effect on license revenue compared to marketing efforts that support license revenue. So I hope this brief presentation will provide a little bit of insight on that. And thank you, Commissioner Bell, for asking. So one important goal of the R3 strategic plan is to decrease churn. And so churn refers to a purchasing behavior that indicates a lapse, right? So somebody buys a license 1 year, but then maybe doesn't buy it the next year or the following year. And cumulative churn rates for all of our license types, combo, hunting, and fishing, are currently at about 42%. So given that trend, email efforts to focus on existing customers and retain them are particularly important. And so to decrease churn, we focus on retention efforts on reminding people to renew their licenses before the season begins, and then also throughout the year with other messages, encourage them to hunt and fish throughout the year. So like I said, although I'll focus more on email today, I do want to let you know that generally our campaigns are very integrated. We use all of the channels at our disposal, including social media, external media, our beautiful magazine, and our wonderful PBS TV show. So much has been said about the COVID effect and its role in getting people outdoors and prompting people to participate in hunting and fishing activities. And that definitely started an increase in license purchases in 2020. But also in 2020, the agency began requesting that the email address field be completed when customers purchased a license online. And in 2020, we started using Google Analytics for e-commerce, which shows us the effectiveness of email campaigns by allowing us to directly track clicked links to actual purchases. So the result in 2020 is that all of a sudden we had the ability to reach about 70% of our license buying customers via email. So now having that 70% retention efforts, keeping them in the fold, become very important. So let's take a quick look at one of our recent campaigns. This is a screenshot of a couple of our renewal emails, and perhaps you received one of them yourself at some time. And so in license year 21, email campaigns contributed 2.3 million, and that's approximately 2.5% of the total renewal revenue for license sales. And that fall and spring campaign went to 400,000 existing customers, yielding $2.3 million in revenue. So why is email a good tool? Well, it's very cost effective. So this campaign that I'm showing you here and others are conducted with an email platform that we already have. And so we use that platform for a number of different things. The campaign doesn't cost us anything extra. And so that's pure revenue. We also believe it encourages earlier purchase of licenses, and I'll show you that in a little bit with our Google Analytics. We do take a data-driven approach to these email campaigns. We are able to do multiple test groups, and we will test things like subject lines. We'll do A/B testing with subject lines, different email design. We test the effectiveness of the time that the email goes out, as to, you know, what a good open rate is for a certain time of day. So 2.5% we think is, you know, it's definitely a modest contribution at this point, but it's early at the game in the amount of time that we've had this number of emails. And so we believe that we can do more with this. So let's take a look at a couple of license years in our renewal campaigns. So how do we know these email campaigns directly support revenue? Well, one thing that we can do is we can look at purchasing behavior on email as compared to purchasing behavior in relation to other channels that are more passive. So you can see in license year 21, email contributed 2.3 million. And then you can see how it significantly drops off, even as compared to people who go directly to the website to purchase their license. So, as you know, because you're likely a recipient of other renewal emails for other services that you subscribe to, people generally tend to take a more direct action when they're prompted. So we know that our email efforts help keep license purchases top of mind for people. So here's also a look at license year 22, our current license year, and we're tracking revenue directly related to email campaigns. And as you can see right now, our license revenue is a little over $4 million, and that's $1.75 million more than the previous license year, and we still have about 3 months left in the license year. So even though you heard yesterday that license sales were cooling a bit in April, it is encouraging to see that that people still are responding to the email campaigns. So I mentioned Google Analytics for e-commerce, and so let's just take a quick look at this snapshot in time. So this is an example of the dashboard that we use, and with this tool, we can measure email clicks to the license purchase page and the resulting purchases in nearly real time. So as I mentioned, we do a lot of testing, and this tool allows us to be very nimble. So if we're conducting a series, say, of three emails for a campaign, and we know that one subject line is doing better, we can quickly shift gears because this tool shows us that. So as I mentioned, this is a snapshot of a single point in time for this current license year. This email that you're seeing here went out on August 16th, and in that single day, email clicks generated 1.5 million. And that was encouraging because compared to the same period of time last license year, this email generated double and during that same period of time last license year. So we can see that these efforts, that our audiences are responding to these efforts. So just as a reminder on this, we aren't looking at the total picture of license sales, just what we can track through the email campaign to Google Analytics. And so last but not least, I want to show you and remind you just of one of our most popular revenue-generating campaigns, Big Time Texas Hunts. And it offers a chance for customers to win any one of 10 premium guided hunts, $10 for every entry, $9 if you purchase online. And in fiscal year 21, this campaign raised $1.32 million for wildlife conservation and public hunting, and this was the highest grossing sales in the program's 24-year history. And the reason that I show you this campaign is because really, I believe this is where the magic really happens. Email is wonderful. Direct email, it gives us data. We can track it. It shows us exactly when and how people are purchasing. But truly, it's really these integrated campaigns over time that work to build knowledge, change beliefs, and initiate certain behaviors. Because whether you've walked to the mailbox and you've picked up this envelope and then maybe you put it down and you don't do anything with it, but then later you're scrolling through your social media feed and you see the same thing and then later you get the email, you know, all of a sudden these messages are meeting you where you are. And some of the pieces, quite frankly, they are harder to track. You know, it's with these type of campaigns, it's harder for even yourself to pinpoint, well, I made this purchase because I saw it on social media. But it's the cumulative effect of integrated campaigns that we know has long-term value. And so that concludes my presentation for today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for allowing me to share this with you.
All right. Vice Chairman Scott has a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Michelle. It's not really a question. It's a comment, and Carter can refresh my memory. I've slept twice, I guess, since this. But I remember 8 or 9 years ago, maybe 10, I don't know. But we talked about how important it was for us to start getting our message out on social media and everything. And these numbers and everything just reiterate how critical it is for us to keep growing and to keep our revenue stream growing and everything, that it's very critical that we continue doing what y'all are doing. And I commend y'all and just keep doing a good job. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have such a talented team with experts, you know, in social media, in email marketing, and each very passionate about the channel that they manage. So I'm very fortunate to work with the team. Thank you.
Can you go back to license renewal campaign for me? One more back. Does this say that in 2022 license sold through the email were $4 million?
Yes, sir.
And through social media communications were $6,500?
That's what we're tracking so far, yes, sir.
We believe $2,900 of sales were off the website?
Yes, sir.
Which is a huge difference from the year before. It was $565,000 down to $2,900. News releases, outdoor apps, a total. So overwhelming majority of the sales came from the email.
Yes,
blast.
Sir. Yes, sir.
And when you go look at the analytics, the sales are down pretty low. You send an email on the 16th. You sell $1.5 million worth of license. And then it quickly goes back to where it was prior to that.
Yes, sir.
Are these emails sent to all license holders? Who gets the email?
It is all current customers. But what I was showing you there is particularly focused on customers who've lapsed. And correct me if I'm wrong, Janice, but customers, we have slightly different campaigns for customers who have not lapsed, correct? We run two different types of campaigns. And what I was showing you today was a campaign focused on customers who have lapsed behavior because we're focused on churn, on
correcting
churn.
So these are people that had a hunting or fishing or a combo license. They lapsed. They didn't renew. And you've gone back at them again and reminded them through an email communication.
Yes, sir. Correct.
Not existing license holders.
That's what I was showing you today.
It's hard for me to read this, but the analytics, can you walk me, if you'll go to the next page, users, new users, sessions, bounce rate, can you talk through that a little bit at just a high level for us? Maybe pick the first one, the combo. It says there's 98,000 users, 51,000 of them were combos.
Hang on just a second. Let me switch to that.
First column on your screenshot.
Janice, do you have a close this the copy that I have in front of me? I can't.
If not, you can send this. I'd like to see
sure,
it. Maybe
absolutely.
Send it to all the commissioners so we understand. Because I don't really know what bounce rate means.
Oh, okay. So bounce rate. That yes, I can address bounce rate. So bounce rate would be an email that bounced back. An incorrect email
okay.
for some reason.
So I'm just going to assume users, new users, let's go to something. Pages, I guess that means per session, I guess that means they went through, what, 8.3 pages of?
Janice, do you know what the pages one is referring to?
They spent 3 minutes and 47 seconds on average. E-commerce conversion rate, does that mean 28% of the people actually bought? That's incredible.
And we have, I'd be happy to talk to you in more detail. We can pull these dashboards from different points in time and can go deeper into, you know, what all of this means. I'd be happy to do that. There is a lot of detail there.
Well, you can't overdo it, but it seems like placed at the right time. It's just the difference between this and all the other opportunities to communicate the message
yes,
and the
sir.
Conversion rate and the cost of the lack of cost in email is just
yes, sir.
Man.
And I will say that again, our efforts right now are focused on existing customers and then really looking at those that have lapsed. But, I mean, there is even a whole other world of things that we can do. It takes more money. It's not as cost effective as this, but in reaching out to prospective buyers, too, because we can do this with prospective buyers. But as I said, with a churn rate of 42%, we feel like our efforts, at least for right now, are best placed in reducing churn.
Churn rate means 42% of license holders lapse?
Yes, sir. And that's a combined percentage of all of our different license types. And I do have it. I do have it broken out. But that's a combined. That's a combined number. Let me see.
Chairman, while she's looking that up, that it's particularly high on the fishing license side of that, and that's a national trend that we see in terms of a lapse in angler purchasing activity, typically one every 5 years or so. Mm-hmm. And so
you're
it's
talking
a
about resident license?
Uh-huh, resident, yeah.
Yeah, the resident license churn rate for fishing is 54.5%. Hunting comes in a lower at 38.7%. Combo license churn is 18.6%, but that overall churn rate is 42%.
Any other commissioners, any questions, comments? Commissioner Hildebrand.
Like so many subscriptions that are out there today, streaming and all kinds of websites, you sign up, you put your credit card kind of on record, and it's an automatic renewal. I'm not proposing this. It's just a question: is could the commission actually adopt a automatic renewal service where each year, absent doing anything, your license renews?
I'm making an opt-out related.
Correct.
Renewal. Yeah. Do we have that ability statutorily?
I do not know.
Okay, we'd have to look at that. But it is an interesting idea, yeah.
Because I know for myself, I've got a lifetime license, and I do that just for ease of, so I don't have to renew it each year. But, you know, it's a larger capital investment, so to speak, on the front end. So, but if you do it incrementally, it could be an interesting process. I think we ought to check.
You bet, yep.
Okay.
I would describe that as interesting as well. Let's look into that. Good idea, Jeff. Good question. Anybody else? Any other commissioners? For Michelle?
Commissioner Bell, just thank you for the information. And, you know, the whole world on social media, I know, is continually evolving. And as platforms come and go, I think we should also try to keep an eye on where things are coming from. You know, in my personal experience, for example, you know, Instagram is an established platform, but, you know, and TikTok is a new platform as an example. And there is while some people say that was the teenager's song and dance platform, there is an incredible amount, there are an incredible amount of people that are actually on that kind of, they'll jump on something, go down a rabbit hole, they find parks and wildlife, and all of a sudden you find a whole new slew of customers. But it would be interesting to see how that can all be tied in, and if there is a kind of a tracking mechanism, because I have a feeling that looking at the difference where we had going to the website last year versus email, there may be some just conversion of people. So I don't know if there's something where if you did had something on the website and that they clicked on from an email, went, how can we track exactly so that even if that there's that delta in the number, it doesn't necessarily say we're not doing our job on the website. It might be people found that message someplace else and are following through, because the bottom line number is positive because we're better off than we were last year.
Yes.
But it's just a matter of trying to figure out how we actually tag those people along the way. But, you know, really interesting effort. And as marketing campaigns go, you know, you sent out that email, it kind of popped up there. We need to send another email.
Yes, sir.
You know, if we do that quarterly, if we get that quarterly, you know, that quarterly spike, you never know what's going to happen. But it's nice to know that you're bringing some people back in that had exited. But you have to have that email address in order to get to them.
That's critical. Yes, right. Is having correct email addresses. And I just want to address the question, Commissioner Hildebrand. My colleague Craig Bonds just let me know that your question about auto renewal of licenses. It's something that's specifically addressed in the R3 plan as something that we'll be looking into.
What is the R3 plan?
The recruit, retain,
And reactivate.
Reactivation.
Remember the R3 plan that was presented on the hunting and fishing and boating that Craig presented, and that's a big part of a big national effort to help deal with how do we get more hunters, anglers, boaters, and shooters? How do we keep them? How do we reactivate those licensed outdoor users? And we put together a state plan, and that's being implemented right now. We have hired coordinators to help implement that, and this is certainly an area that we'll be coming back pretty regularly to report on with the commission. But that's what that refers to, and we'll send out that plan to the commission so that all of you have a copy of it.
What's the cost of an in-state, say, fishing license or combo license? Roughly.
A resident combo license is $68. That doesn't include the federal stamp. A resident hunting license is $30. Fishing, Craig, is resident is $30. So roughly that.
You know, I'm betting you would get a really good response on people not wanting to hassle with re-permitting their license. And so I think it's something we should look at most definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Any other questions or comments for Ms. Diaz? We through, really? It's only 10:29.
This will be a record, baby.
I love records. Okay.
You want to talk about deer, Chairman?
I'm sorry. No, I do not.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Carter, you have anything else?
I don't. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Smith, this commission has completed its business. I declare us adjourned at 10:29 a.m.
That may be a record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners.